Now on the tee, it's Maddie and the Caddy. Here's Matt Barry and Michael Collins.
Special emergency calendar edition of Maddie and the Caddy with no Maddie this edition, because in talking about the schedule and moving forward for the PGA Tour, the Open Championship, Ryder Cup, and everything schedule related, if I'm getting into the weeds, there's no one I'd rather get in the weeds with and go crazy with other than my colleague Bob Harrig, who is joining us on this week's Maddie and the Caddy. What up, Bob?
Hey, Michael, how are you? Glad to do this. Thank you.
Yeah, man. It's you talk about when it all hits the fan at one time. I guess this all started last week when there was an initial report that came out that said the Open was going to cancel, and then the CEO of the RNA, Martin Slumbers, walked that back and said no decision had been made. And then today, as we record this on Monday of what was supposed to be Masters Week, not only does the RNA come out and cancel the Open, the Masters comes out and gives a date after saying it's postponed. The U.S. Open also puts a date out there after being postponed. And the PGA Championship does the exact same thing, along with the PGA Tour, which I'm sure everyone listening is wondering, why all at once? So I'm going to ask you, why all at once?
I think they just wanted to have sort of a unified front and show that they're all in this together and that they work together, and they did have to work together. You know, some of these dates are in spots where maybe there might have been a PGA Tour event. And the PGA Tour is losing millions of dollars every time they don't play a tournament. And they don't want to lose tournaments.
How so? How so?
Well, because every week that they don't play, in theory, they're not getting a title sponsor fee and they're not getting a TV rights fee. Now, I don't know the intricacies of how those contracts work, but certainly you would think that the title sponsor, if there isn't an event played, is not going to be paying $7, 8, 9 million, whatever they pay.
Right.
And CBS and NBC and Golf Channel aren't going to be paying their full amount for an event that is never on the air. So whatever those numbers are, there is some amount that the tour keeps for itself. Obviously, a big chunk goes back to TV in terms of ad buys. A big chunk goes to the players in terms of the purse. A smaller chunk goes to the actual tournament to help them run the event. The tour keeps some back. That's how they operate. That's how they pay for that big clubhouse in Ponte Vedra, and that's how their executives get paid, and that's how they operate. You know, that's how they pay salaries, and it's not any small amount. So what are we now? I think there's 9 events so far that have been canceled or postponed. You know, even if it's just $1 million per, which I'm guessing is more, that's $9 million they don't have that they were counting on. And so, long-winded point, but when you get to these parts in August, September, when the majors want a week, well, the tour has to sort of work with them to make sure it all works out. And it has, because what's happened is the tour is going to try to take the week vacated by the U.S. Open in June.
And put another tournament there.
Right. And it looks like they want to play the Memorial there. Nothing's official, but that's what they'd like to do. The week that was vacated by the Olympics is now going to probably be a week that the tour will slot a tournament in there. And because the PGA Championship is going the week after, the tour then moved 4 events a week later: the Wyndham, Northern Trust, BMW Tour Championship, which will now be Labor Day weekend. That was supposed to be an off week. Clearly, there were fall events scheduled for when the U.S. Open is now going to be played, and the same in November for when the Masters is going to be played. So hopefully, my guess is you'll see opposite events against the majors like you might not have seen before. There might be an opposite event against the FedEx event, which will now follow probably the Memorial if we're playing golf around 4th of July. And, you know, so that they can try to give as many playing opportunities as they can.
Here's my question to that, too. When you said in one of the first open week that potentially is there is when the U.S. Open was going to be played, which is the week of June 15th to the 21st. And that's when the U.S. Open was supposed to be played. And
right.
And the hope is that the Memorial will move to that. But the irony is on the schedule that the tour put out for this new schedule, kind of updated, the Charles Schwab Challenge, May 21st to the 24th, still not canceled or postponed. Rocket Mortgage, which is the week after in Detroit, May 28th to the 31st, still not canceled or postponed. So those events that haven't been canceled or postponed, and of course the Memorial is the week after Rocket Mortgage. And so why are they talking about moving, or why is the hope that they're talking about moving the Memorial when it hasn't even been canceled or postponed yet?
Right.
From the week of June 4th to the 7th, where I understand, I mean, Texas just went on lockdown, on a lockdown-ish schedule. And no one at the PGA Tour yet has said anything about Colonial not happening. So why is that? I don't understand. When the tour puts something like this out, there's a lot of questions. Like one of the players that I talked to said, okay, well, if the U.S. Open and the Masters is after the Tour Championship, how's this FedEx Cup going to work?
Well, first of all, let me answer your first part there. I think the reason we haven't heard those things canceled or postponed is because they're actually trying to figure out how that might work. There's a chance that the Colonial could be postponed and put in one of those open dates that we talked about. That might be something that they do. The Memorial, obviously, is a, you know, well-established tournament. Jack Nicklaus, the host, I'm sure they want to do all they can to try to play it if they can. Of course, as we're saying this, is the middle of June even realistic?
Right.
You know, I think we both know it's a long shot. And so, but for now, they're not going to cancel them. They're going to slot them, you know, as late as they can to try to start a schedule. And then, you know, things will fall the way the authorities and the government officials and the medical people say. As for the FedEx Cup and the playoffs, you know, me personally, I'm a little surprised they're going to go at it in that way, because let's say they didn't start until middle of July. So now you're only going to have like, what, four or five events before the FedEx Cup playoffs?
Yeah, as of now, like a guy like Brooks Koepka and Justin Rose, not even in the playoffs.
I mean, and it's, I guess, you know, we're in such unprecedented times that you kind of have to throw these norms out the window. Like you can't right. look at it in terms of what's fair and what isn't. But I'm a little surprised that the idea of putting the Tour Championship in November. Remember, before there were FedEx Cup playoffs, the Tour Championship was in November.
Yes.
And they played it in Atlanta, they played it in Houston, they played it all over. And all it was the top 30 in money went to the Tour Championship. They could have done something similar like that just for this one time.
Yep.
You could have played those other FedEx playoff events as big money, big point events, you know, and then at where they are on the schedule, and then just kind of morphed into whatever tournaments you have in the fall, including those majors, try to play the Tour Championship after it with who's ever just top 30 in points and do it that way. It's not the way we're used to. It's not exactly real clean, but that way, at least you get one season over with, and then you could start the new season in January. What we're looking at here is having six majors in the 2021 season. Because you're going to have two majors after the Tour Championship,
right.
And then you're going to have all four majors next year, you know, hopefully.
And so, Masters, no one's even talked about Masters qualifying. That was the two things I heard from another tour pro that I spoke to. One was about the FedEx Cup, and when he got the email with the new schedule and the proposed quote-unquote full schedule from the PGA Tour, his initial thought was, this is a bad look. It's a bad look where we are economically and where people are economically. Now we're going to be out there playing for $8 and $9 million a week, and then someone's going to potentially walk away with $15 million when so many people have lost their jobs and have lost employment. So he said for him, that was a bad look. And the other thing that he didn't understand was, how's Masters qualifying going to happen now? Well, so we're going to have a Masters in November, and then 4 months and 4 days later, we're starting up again. So how's that going to work?
Well, they obviously haven't told us exactly, other than to say that anybody who had qualified for the one that was supposed to be this week will qualify. So, like, if you won a tour event since last year's Masters up until now, you're in. Or if you were top 50 in the world at the end of 2019, you're in. What they haven't said is, well, there'll be a new top 50 cutoff, you know, which normally would have been right after the match play.
Right.
That was the last way in. What they also haven't said, what about any of these other tournaments that are played before the Masters? There could be 10 of them. Would the winners of those get in this Masters, or are they deferred to next year's Masters? See, they haven't said. My guess is they're going to try to figure all that out. And they'll let the players know, like, in other words, if it's a small number of events before the Masters, they might say, yeah, you're in. If it's a big number, they might not, because their number was getting up there already.
Yeah.
And with the November Masters, daylight will be earlier. You know, this week it's light out till 7:30. Right. At that time of year, it's more like 5:30. In fact, pool have gone back to standard time. So it's darker earlier. They're going to have two tee starts. They're going to want to have a smaller field if possible. So again, though, you know, I just sort of go back and say, all of these things will be good problems to have if we have to deal with them, because that means they're playing.
Yeah.
But playing sort of supersedes any of the hassles. Now, of course, you know, a guy whose livelihood this is, it's easy for me to say that, right? And now he might be denied a chance. I think they're going to do everything they can to be as fair as possible, so that a guy who, you know, didn't have opportunities this year, let's say you were an exempt player in this season, they kind of have to make you exempt for next season as well, you know, and that's what one of the players I talked to.
That's what he was saying. He was like, he says, I love the position I'm in. I love the position I'm in because guys who decided I'm not playing in the fall, I'm not going to play until after the West Coast. And now they, you know, someone like Brooks, is not necessarily his fault because he was injured. But other guys, you know, like, I don't know, other guys who only have three or four starts because no one saw this coming. Yeah, it's not their fault that they didn't see this coming, but you're also an independent contractor. And maybe this is a lesson to be learned of, take your opportunities when you get them, because you don't know when they're going to be taken away. So even if we're back playing in the middle of June and play 16 events,
right,
that would be 34 total, which is still a pretty solid year. But it definitely throws a monkey wrench into things as far as guys, how do guys qualify, not just for the playoffs, but like you said, for next year.
Well, I think if you were qualified for this season through the top 125 and you are not exempt in any other way, they have to make you exempt for the next season, whether you're in the top 125 or not. Mm. A guy like Brooks Koepka is exempt anyway.
No matter what, you know? Yes.
Yeah, and so he doesn't have to worry. Obviously, the top players are exempt through having won or what have you, or multiple victories, which carries over. But those guys who were fighting it out for the top 125, and even who came through the web.com,
Corn Ferry, yeah.
Their priority ranking should probably still hold. Now, though, what does that say? Are they going to have a Q school in December? So, look, these are all things that they have to figure out. Like, here's a great example that on a smaller scale, the Masters canceled the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Yep.
But they said that everybody who qualified for this year's tournament will be allowed to play next year as long as they remain an amateur. Okay, so what is it? 72 players in the field. Well, what if 65 of them say they're coming back? So now there's only 7 spots for new players? But I mean, that's almost the way you have to look at it. You have to sort of let the ones who are already in back in again. Mm. And you have to figure out some other way to accommodate the new qualifiers. And in terms of the tour, You know, for next year, they might have to try to increase fields. I think they'd be very well suited to have more opposite events, which I think we're going to see this fall. But, you know, we don't have an opposite event against the Players. We don't have an opposite event against the U.S. Open and the Masters. There used to be. Mm. We don't have, you know, there's one against the Open, and there's one against a couple of the WGCs. But surely they can find some people, hopefully, that would be willing to put those events on for a far less sponsorship fee and give guys an opportunity. And if there were, say, 8 of those next season with a shortened schedule, isn't that better than not? Yeah, I just think, you know, obviously smarter people are sitting there putting their heads together thinking of all these things. And it might be one of the reasons why we don't know more at this point and why some of those events weren't hashed out like the majors were today.
And that's what, yeah, and it's the whole, there is a feeling a little bit behind this that feels like, let's just get this out there and we'll figure everything else out just a little bit. But I got to say, you know, the thing that surprised me the most when everything came out was that not only did the Masters say it's happening in November, but they also said, patrons, come on. If you got a ticket, right, bring it, which I never thought that they would make an announcement like that, even this early. You know?
Well, I think they're doing that basically to say, if we can't have spectators at that point, we're not going to play. You know,
if it comes down to it, and the decision is to play without patrons or not play at all, you think that they would rather not play at all?
It's just a guess, but I do. I think, and frankly, it's because if it's determined that it's not safe with spectators, how is it still safe?
Because you can social distance inside the ropes.
Yes, you can.
It's much more difficult to practice social distancing when everyone wants to be around the 9th and the 18th green.
I get that. But by the same token, if it's deemed not safe to travel yet, if it's deemed not safe to have big clusters of people, you still have to have a lot of TV production people there.
Agreed.
You're not doing it without TV.
Yeah.
You're still going to have some volunteers. You know, you've got to have, you know, or you've probably got to have some place for them to eat. So I guess what I'm trying to say is they need to be clear for everyone, I think, for these things to happen. Now, here's the other side to it where I could see no spectators. If they can get to the point where you are testing everyone and all the players and caddies and officials and scorers and rules officials and media and, you know, Augusta National members can be tested or for the U.S. Open as well or the PGA, then obviously that's a much smaller group to test than 20,000 people a day. Then maybe that makes sense to have no fans. You know, I'm also wondering, is there a point we get to where you could test all the spectators? I know that sounds ridiculous right now, but if there's a test that takes 2 minutes or 5 minutes and you go through the turnstiles and you get tested and they say yay or nay, obviously it's going to be monumental deal to pull off.
Yeah.
But if that is what it takes to restore confidence for these things, great. I don't know if we're going to be able to get to that point. You know, you hear these stories about, you know, these quick tests and, you know, maybe in a couple of months time, we'll have thousands upon thousands of those and a place could find a way to do it. You'd have to do it out in the parking lot or something. And you turn away people who test positive.
Are you surprised that we're doing this with the Masters, I can understand, but it is very surreal, I guess is the best word that I can use, in that two of these major championships are going to be played at what would be considered epicenters of where this virus was started, you know, or where big numbers started breaking out. So with the PGA Championship in Harding Park, and then especially the U.S. Open now at Wingfoot in New York.
The only thing I can say there is they've just got their fingers crossed and are hoping for a miracle. You know, that's what it is. That in New York, they're hoping that 3 months extra time is the trick for them. And in San Francisco, it's only really what, 2.5 months, I guess, for them. And I think we're going to know, you know, at a certain point, if it's realistic even. But as I've been saying, like, and look, there was some pushback on announcing this today. You know, this, we're in a tough spot right now with this, you know, we're still at a very, very dangerous position, and there's a lot of doom and gloom at this moment. I mean, maybe they could have waited a week or two to announce this, but I understand why they wanted to get this done, whether they announced it or not. And that is, if you're going to do it, you have to be able to plan for it.
Right.
And so you've got to get the event out there and situated, because there's so many things that have to go into this that you can't do otherwise, because, you know, you got to have hotel rooms, you got to get volunteers lined up, you've got to be able to plan for this. And if they're not able to know a date out in the future, how are you going to do that? You can't sit there and go, well, let's wait 2 months and see if it's ready to go. And then, okay, yeah, we got the all clear. Now we're going to plan the Masters. You know,
And you live not far from and went out and saw what Innisbrook, where they play in Tampa, where they play the Valspar. You went out and saw the stands were up. Everything was ready to go. And then they had to tear everything down. So that doesn't happen over a week or a month.
It's a couple of months of work to put a tournament together like that.
But on the flip side of that, though, is if we're playing without spectators, you don't need any of that.
That's a good point. And or if you are I'm just not sure like where we're going to be with this, because I'm sort of like, if it's not safe enough to have spectators, how is it safe enough to have anybody? Okay, but if you go with the theory that, like as you said, hey, they can socially distance inside the ropes. Although I'm still wondering, how does a player hand his golf club back to the caddy?
The caddy doesn't touch the club. So here's how you do it. And you're a caddy too. So when I tell you this, you'll be like, okay, the only thing the caddy does is carry the bag. The player has to clean the clubs. The player has to clean the golf ball. This is the one time where the caddy's sole job is to carry the bag and set the bag down. And then the caddy can walk his own yardage. The caddy can still read the greens, but all of that stuff can still be there. And the caddy's standing on one side of the bag, you know, in distancing, can still talk to the player about the shot and give advice, but the caddy won't be able to handle the clubs. That's how you keep it safe.
That's a good point. Fair point. I would say, though, if you tested everybody before, all the players and caddies and officials, then that doesn't become an issue if they're clear, right? Or you would think.
True.
So, but you know, these are the things that you have to, they have to sort through, to the point about no spectators or no stands. Well, what if you allowed spectators in, but you had no luxury suites and no grandstands, so they're not crowded next to each other? Now, you're still going to have social distancing issues at restrooms around the 18th green, that kind of stuff.
Boxes and greens would be a problem. Right.
Would it be dissipated enough to where it's safer? You know, in other words, if we got back to the thing where groups of 30 or 40 or 50 are okay, you know, which is, remember, it wasn't that long ago, that was the recommendation.
Right. Group 50 or less. Right.
No groups of more than 50. You know, so again, I don't know, but I mean, I just think that's one of the reasons that they've put this schedule out. Now they're like, okay, now we know how we're going to do it if we do it. Let's work towards trying to do it if we're able to.
The only other thing about not having corporate boxes is, as you said, that is also a way that tournaments generate money for charities. And it's a lot.
No doubt. No doubt. It's a lot. Of course, that's their bottom line. All these tournaments, their bottom line is basically – you know, they're not getting the purse money. They're not getting the TV money. They raise it through sponsorships, ticket sales, concessions, merchandise, that stuff. That's how they make their money. They pay their bills and they give the rest to charity. You know, that leads me to another point. You know, should golf try to do some sort of big charity event that is earmarked for coronavirus relief? You know, and I think this notion of the Tiger Phil stuff that's been circulating, there's been some thought about that maybe filling that void. But could there be an event, one of these events or more than one, that sort of earmarks its charitable efforts towards that? To your point about, you know, is it a bad look for these guys to be playing for $8 million purses? Well, you know, if they had a charitable component where everybody agreed to give 10% of their earnings to charity and all the tournament proceeds went to it, you know, I think people could get behind that. The other side of it, though, is a lot of these local communities have charities that count on this money every year. You know, yes. They've gotten used to it. They're the beneficiary of the tournament. It's a big part of their budget. What about them? So there are so many things for them to work through. And we're just talking about one little piece of our world, the golf world. It's a monumental thing that they all face right now.
Why did everyone really believe that Tiger Phil thing was going to happen?
Well, here's the thing. I think Phil, it grew legs because Phil responded to just an innocuous Twitter user about having a match with Tiger with one camera and everybody would watch. And, you know, wouldn't that be great? And Phil just responded with two words, working on it. Excuse me, three words, three. Working on it.
Yeah.
And then he responded. Somebody said, "You're not kidding me, are you?" He said, I wouldn't kid. And so Phil, I don't think, was talking about the same thing, because there had been rumblings before the world was shut down about another Tiger Phil thing, like in Vegas in 2018, and this one would have partners. And what had been in the discussion stages was Brady and Manning being part of it. Well, as soon as this whole thing came up, those discussions got put on hold. You know, they weren't going to go through. They weren't going to go forward with that because, first of all, it's a bad look. Second of all, when were you going to play it? And the original concept was for it to not be a big charitable thing. It was, you know, Phil and Tiger were going to make out in this deal. Like, that's how these things work. And the PGA Tour was going to make out, and it was going to be a great made-for-TV thing. Well, then when this all came up, the goalposts shifted. And now you're talking about doing it for charity. Well, still, for that to happen, you've got to have the clearance. Phil lives in California and Tiger lives in Florida. People have to travel. There has to be people to put it on TV, and you're not going to do it with one camera.
The tour has to sign off on it.
Right. People are making the tour out to be the bad guys. They're not. They will sign off if it's doable.
Right.
They don't want to stand in the way of it, but it's got to work. It's got to work for them. It's got to work. It's got to obviously work, in the whole medical sense of it. And it's got to work for the players. And we just don't know when that could happen. And to have it like right now or next week or in 2 weeks or at the end of April when the whole world is shut down. Oof. I just still don't think that works.
No.
You know, it's just them and they could each be on their own cart and you can have a couple of camera guys. I think it's way more complicated than that.
Well, it is. It's very more complicated.
And to put it on TV, you're going to want it to look good. You're not going to want to have one camera. Golf isn't covered with one camera. It's not even covered with two. Think of all the people out there to make that work just for two guys. You know, then what? You know, they're going to try to you'd have to interview them. You have to mic them. I mean, there's people, human beings involved with that, that I don't think we're at that point yet where something like that could happen.
I completely agree. And if it's going to be partners, after the way that the last one went down, the two partners that I don't need with Tiger and Phil would be Peyton and Tom Brady. Although Peyton, yes, because Peyton will talk smack. I know Peyton's not afraid to talk a little smack, but Tom Brady, I think, is preparing to come down to your neck of the woods. So Yep. I'm kind of thinking he's not going to be in. All right. So as we wrap this up, then let's just say, do you believe that we will be playing golf the week of June 15th to the 21st when the U.S. Open was supposed to take place?
In all honesty, Mike, no.
Me neither, man. I'm glad you said that. Good.
I just think it's too soon. I mean, listen, I would love to be wrong about that. I hope, you know, most of the states have this stay-at-home order through April, right? So on April 30th, if we all wake up and the numbers have decreased greatly and the experts say that it's safe on June 15th, we're going to need another month, but June 15th will be good. Great. But I mean, it just seems like we're a little ways away from that. I mean, I think the middle of July is probably more realistic. And frankly, look, with the schedule that they've put together, you know, the amount of events, the majors and everything, if they could even get back on August 1st, I think we'd be doing cartwheels and we'd be ecstatic because there'd be a lot of big events in August, September, October, the Masters in November. You know, and then boom, we're right back into it again in January. Going to have another Masters in April. You know, it would be, I think it's worth being patient for that. And, you know, as opposed to like rushing it and running into issues. And look, if they have a Masters in November, can you imagine how cool it will be? Just the scenery and just how the golf course would play. And we're going to be talking about all the differences and all the, you know, the intricacies of Augusta National at a different time of year. It'll be fascinating. Same with the U.S. Open.
And obviously, Augusta's a winter course. That's the thing. It's a golf club that is winter only anyway. So it might look more lush than we've ever seen it before. And I love the word that you said, how cool, because it's middle of November. It's not probably going to be in the 70s or 80s, but maybe it will be. And it's Augusta National. So it might be the only place in the world that can get live azaleas in November. They'll find a way.
I don't know if they can do that, but you're going to have the, you know, the leaves turning colors.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to have, you know, as you said, they're a winter club. They overseed with rye in September. By the time the members come back in October, the place is green. Now, it might not be as green as it is this week, but it's green. So you give it another month into November, and with the ability they have to water, they've got those sub-air systems. They can heat and cool under the greens.
Worrying about a hard freeze. Like, there's no – winter hasn't happened.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about – it's only through the summer. Like, it's – then they can take care of it then.
It's quite possible it'll look – the actual course itself will look exactly like it does in April. Maybe it's a tad thinner, because the rye hasn't come in fully and the Bermuda is still prevalent. But so what? Wouldn't that be cool? They have to adapt to it. It's just like from year to year, anytime a course might change due to weather. And, you know, winged foot in September is going to be a lot different than winged foot in June. You know, so and I think that these are the things that you need to sort of embrace. Like, OK, it's not going to be how it normally is. This will be kind of cool. This will be fun. And frankly, good problems to have, because that means we're playing.
Yeah, that's the whole point, man. The point is we're playing golf. And if that is happening when all of this is going on, we can figure it out. But the fact that we'd be playing golf will be fantastic. So, man, thanks for jumping on with the emergency podcast. I'm super surprised at how all of this news came out at one time, and it was just a great text message from you going, hey, man, you want to chat about this? Hell yeah, I want to chat about this. We got to get this out there and let people know. So hopefully this helps educate people just a little bit on everything that's going on and why all the decisions were made the way that they were made. This has been a special edition, Maddie and the Caddy, featuring Bob Harrick. Bob, thanks again, man.
Thanks, buddy. Take it easy.
Thanks for listening to Maddie and the Caddy. Check out more great ESPN podcasts in the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Maddie and the Caddy.